This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss an investigation by ProPublica that reveals a far-reaching web of financial relationships linking powerful policymakers in the Trump administration to the industries their agencies are supposed to regulate. ProPublica reporters reviewed nearly 3,200 disclosure records tied to more than 1,500 political appointees in the Trump administration. You can search an online database to explore potential conflicts of interest for Trump and his team. The documents disclose positions officials have held outside government, their assets, and their debts, among other things. For example, the documents show that senior executive branch officials, including former Attorney General Pam Bondi, made well-timed securities trades, at times selling stocks just before markets plunged because Trump announced new tariffs. Other disclosures revealed that two high-ranking scientists at the EPA who recently helped downgrade the agency's assessment of the health risks of formaldehyde previously held positions at the chemical industry's leading trade group. Joining us is Corey Johnson, a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at ProPublica and co-founder of the Ida B. Wells Society for Investigative Reporting. Corey Johnson worked on this investigation with Brandon Roberts and Al Shaw. Hi, Corey. Thank you and your colleagues for this very important report, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you as always. So you and your colleagues sifted through a lot of information, nearly 3,200 disclosure records that are required under federal law for senior officials and nominees entering government service. You looked at the finances of more than 1,500 federal officials appointed by Trump. Why did you decide to take on this project? What sparked it? And I mean, this took you and your colleagues a year to do?
Yes. You know, I think what initially started was my colleagues Brandon and Al and some of their partners on our really fine data team wanted to just get their arms around the data around federal ethics and disclosure. So a lot of people don't know that there's a federal law that requires government officials who work at the federal level to not be motivated by, use their power, the agency's power, to benefit themselves. And so in order to get a better handle on that, the law requires that these officials turn over documents that lets the public know what their finances are, to see if there might be some conflicts. And there are trained officials at every agency. And then there's another agency called the Office of Government Ethics, whose job is to look at all these documents and ensure that the public interest is protected against conflicts. And so we thought that wouldn't it be great if we just got our arms around some of these documents and look to see what we could find. I mean, the president during the first administration had done some things that, you know, raised red flags. You know, when he came into office and he immediately started moving businesses to his son's names, that raised a lot of questions in the public then. And so coming back in Trump too, he had already signaled certain things that he was going to be the biggest pro-crypto president ever. And he started making moves with his family members to invest heavily in crypto and to sell coins. And so we were curious, like, what would this Trump 2.0 look like given these set of circumstances? And then we noticed that almost immediately he was bringing in billionaires to government jobs, like people who were leaving highly successful businesses to go and take positions in government that you would think would be beneath them, like an undersecretary of defense or, you know, a commerce secretary. When you're making billions of dollars, why would you want to relegate yourself to a job that can only pay you a few hundred thousands? And so it was a lot of little red flags that said maybe we should take a closer look at what's happening on the ground. And then from that look, that's where all this reporting sprung from.
You all did an amazing job with this database. So you can go to the Explore Financial Disclosures database. You can type in a name in the Trump administration. You can type in, for example, a think tank like the Heritage Foundation or the Federalist Society. You've got all of these businesses like Palantir, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Chevron, cryptocurrency. So can you walk us through how this works? Because to your point, some of these people, a lot of these people are so incredibly wealthy. I'm guessing that a lot of people have never heard of some of the people on this page. So, for example, if you click on, and I've never heard of this person, Melinda Hildebrand, Ambassador to the Republic of Costa Rica, Department of State. So tell us, her recorded assets are between 603 million and almost 2 billion. How do we read this? When we click on Melinda Hildebrand, we see roles outside of the government, all these roles that she's played, roles, and then spouse's assets. And so this is a lot of information that you all put together.
So I'm gonna give you the cheat code. I'm gonna give you and the public the cheat code, because you got to know, with me, I kind of consider myself a regular person who does reporting and not necessarily a reporter by trade. And so I'll admit that when I approached this data initially, it was very daunting and overwhelming. And so a couple things that helped me, generally speaking, you submit what's called a 278 form, which identifies what your finances are and what your spouse's finances are, to the degree that it could potentially provide some conflicts. But what happens at that point is ethics officials, trained officials, will look at that raw document, like what you just cited, and then they'll look at the government official's job and their job title and responsibilities. And then they will make a judgment call on which one of those finances could potentially pose a conflict of interest. And so they will then have conversations and discussions around how to mitigate that, how to prevent the harm from those conflicts of interest. And so the resulting document that's created is called an ethics agreement. The ethics agreement, which you will see in our database, is a very important document for the public, because that's the agreement between the government official and the government saying, because of the various conflicts that got flagged, this is what I'm going to do. And in some cases, they'll tell them they need to sell or divest the whatever it is that's causing a potential problem. So if they have a company that could pose a conflict, ethics officials might tell them they need to sell that company and in order to do the government business. And so the ethics agreement will spell out everything that could have been a problem and what the negotiations were on how to deal with that problem. Now, the reason why I zero in on that document, because for our reporting, that document then became very instructive, because we would often then go and try to compare what the person agreed to with what actually happened. So, for instance, Todd Blanche, the current attorney general, late last year, we were looking at his documents, and he came into government owning hundreds of thousands of dollars of cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and other crypto holdings. He promised that he would sell or he would divest from that crypto within 90 days of his appointment or his confirmation by the Senate. He also pledged that he would not take any type of actions in his job that could do anything that would impose or plump his finances up or do anything that could benefit him in holding those finances, right? And so he pledged he would not do it. And so within, but what we did was we compared the date of that ethics agreement, when he signed it, and a few weeks after signing it, he sends out a memo killing and crushing all crypto enforcement that had happened during the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. Any ongoing investigations that were had, he killed them. And then he wrote in the memo that they would no longer deal with crypto in this way. They would no longer go after companies and the transfer platforms that in the previous administration had found were rife with fraud and all kind of corruption. Blanche wrote a memo saying we're not touching any of that stuff. And in fact, the policy of the DOJ is that we're here to back the president, and we're going to be part of this big panel that the president is putting together to promote crypto. He wrote all of this in a memo. And when we checked, he hadn't divested his own crypto. So what happened after he killed these enforcements, the price and the value of crypto spiked immediately. Mm-hmm. As the market was cheering, yay, no more government punishment and no more of that stuff. And so the market exploded. Crypto's values went up, which meant his own crypto values went up. And he didn't divest until 2 months later. And when he did, he said, I'm gifting this to my adult children. Well, when we talked to experts, they hit the roof. They said that this was a classic example of a clear-cut violation of the federal criminal statute. And further, they said, even though the law does not ban giving assets to adult children, that it violated the spirit of the law, because the law doesn't want you to use the government power to benefit yourself and your family in that way. They want you to be doing what's in the public's interest first and not your own. And so that's a classic example of how we looked at the ethics agreement and then compared it to what Mr. Blanche was doing in real time and saw where there were potential criminal violations.
Corey, you and your colleagues at ProPublica also report that on his first day back in office, Trump rescinded an executive order signed by Biden that required his appointees to comply with an ethics pledge. It barred them from working on issues related to their former lobbying topics or clients for 2 years. Because we know there's been so much corruption under both parties. So Biden signs this, puts this into effect, Trump gets rid of it, and then Trump fired 17 inspectors general charged with investigating fraud, corruption, and conflicts of interest across the government. He removes the head of the Office of Government Ethics. They oversee ethics compliance, and the office is without a head or a chief of staff. So that is another reason why your reporting is so important. In our 5 remaining minutes, Corey, I would love to talk about how you all start this piece, because this is another story that people need to know about. So you start this piece by writing, thousands of companies are jockeying for billions of dollars in Defense Department contracts to build a shield designed to intercept and destroy missiles launched against the United States. We're going to have to do another show about this, but who's going to launch missiles against the United States? Amid the intense competition, a handful of firms have an important inside connection. You report at least 4 of the companies awarded contracts so far are owned by, is it Cerberus? Cerberus Capital Management, a private equity firm founded by billionaire Steve Feinberg, who until last year ran the company and is now the Deputy Secretary of Defense, the second highest ranking official in the Pentagon. Feinberg oversees the office in charge of the Golden Dome for America project, which is modeled on Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. Feinberg filed paperwork saying he divested from Cerberus and its related business. but his government ethics record contains an unusual clause. He's allowed to continue contracting with the company for tax compliance and accounting services, as well as healthcare coverage, a financial relationship that documents show could continue indefinitely. So in our remaining couple minutes, can you tell us what else you found here?
I know.
I wish we had another half hour.
Yeah, that's very unusual. Again, the whole point of the law is that you're not conflicted in a way where you're paying a company that is literally contracting with your office to get benefits. That's not how the federal conflicts of law and ethics rules were intended on working. But that's what we have here with the example that you mentioned with Mr. Feinberg and the Golden Dome of America. And there are a bunch of different companies that are vying for contracts in that particular program that Cerberus and others connected to the Defense Department, you know, have some ties to. And so it was obviously something that raised huge concerns. And going forward, the benefit of this particular database that we created, you mentioned what the president has been doing in terms of getting rid of inspector generals and getting rid of or hollowing out the Office of Government Ethics. At a time where we have so many wealthy, powerful individuals going into government that have ties to these industries, the current administration has kind of hollowed out the system that's supposed to monitor, check, and contain the worst behavior that could happen as a result of this. And so when you got that kind of dynamic, we thought that maybe if we put together a tool that the public could then use, the larger public, that maybe it could counterbalance what we're seeing in government right now with not enough safety controls put in place. Or in other words, sunlight tends to be the best disinfectant. And so we was hoping that if we shed some light on this in a broader way, that the public could step in and fill the role that the regulators and the inspector generals are not able to.
Well, and just learning about the Golden Dome for America project on its own is so important at a time when Pete Hegseth is asking for $1.5 trillion for the military. You all report that in December, the Defense Department started selecting companies for this Golden Dome project, for which it has allocated as much as $151 billion. And as you report, Trump's Golden Dome for America imagines a battery of weapons deployed from land, sea, and space to destroy missiles launched at the U.S. I mean, Corey, at a time when more than half the country struggles to make ends meet, they're putting aside $151 billion for this Golden Dome project. And as you report, they've already given awards to 2,000 firms.
Yeah, I mean, this is literally... people of a certain age might remember Ronald Reagan mentioning Star Wars, his idea of having things in space that would shoot missiles down. President Trump has rekindled Star Wars under Reagan, and he's now calling it the Golden Dome. And yet, about $151 billion has been allocated so far, and it's happening largely without a lot of public awareness or conversations in mainstream media.
Wow. Corey Johnson is a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter at ProPublica. Corey worked on this investigation with Brandon Roberts, Al Shaw, and the amazing team at ProPublica. You can find the piece, Documents Reveal a Web of Financial Ties Between Trump Officials and the Industries They Help Regulate. And then they also have this incredible tool that allows you to really dive deep. You can either put in a name or like the Heritage Foundation, the Federalist Society, Palantir. It allows the public to also search for this very important data. It's almost like the government is providing a slush fund of taxpayer dollars to billionaires. Corey, thank you so much to you and your team, and we'd love to have you back to talk more about your findings.
Thank you so much for having me. The service that you all do is invaluable. We appreciate it.
Well, we so appreciate you and the team at ProPublica. Thank you so much. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show, Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.